Hello and welcome to the House of Legends, where you can hear world myths and legends told by a professional storyteller. I'm your host Daniel Allison, and this is episode 63, The Hand in the Dark. Before we go any further, I'd like to thank Lotta Lothgren and Adrienne Blanks for becoming patrons of House of Legends. If you're a new listener, welcome and thank you very much for joining us. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, then hit subscribe now in your podcast app to make sure you don't miss an episode. On this podcast, you'll hear myths, legends, and traditional stories from myself and master storytellers from across the world. I release two episodes each month, one featuring a story from me and one featuring a story from a guest teller. You can get access to every House of Legends episode by becoming a patron. By pledging $5 per month or more, you'll receive a patron-only episode each month, along with a worksheet full of questions and creative prompts to help you deepen your connection to the story. As well as being an oral storyteller, I'm also an author. I write retellings of myths and legends, as well as fantasy inspired by Celtic myths and legends. You can now find my books by searching for Daniel Allison on Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble and Waterstones, though currently you can only get my full catalogue on Amazon. You can get my book The Shattering Sea as a free download on Kindle, Kobo and Apple Books. If you're interested in becoming a storyteller yourself, or you're already a storyteller and would like to develop your craft, you can join my online storytelling school, The Roundhouse, or you can join my Myth Singers coaching program, which includes a Roundhouse membership plus 2 monthly group coaching sessions with me. Visit roundhouseschool.com to learn more and download a free pack of stories. You'll find links to all of the above in the show notes. Our story this week is The Hand in the Dark, the third part of the first branch of the Mabinogion. I wouldn't recommend listening to this one unless you've listened to the two preceding stories. So now here it is, The Hand in the Dark. We have heard of how Poeth of Dyved travelled to Annoven and came back a better man. We have heard of how he met and fell in love with Rhiannon and of the trials he faced before they were married. And now we'll hear what happened after they were married. Poeth and Rhiannon travelled around Dyved, visiting this court and that court. And for a while, they stayed in the court at Arberth. They'd been married about a year, and Rhiannon was not pregnant yet. And one day, some of Poeth's men took him into the room and had a chat with him. "You're happy with this wife of yours," one of them said. "Yes, I am." "Well, it's just we noticed, couldn't help but notice, that she doesn't seem to be pregnant yet." And he said, "Well, that's no fault of mine and no fault of hers." "It's just that the realm needs an heir. And if you're not going to get one of her, then..." Poeth would hear no more of it. He left the room, and as chance would have it, not long after that, Rhiannon became pregnant. And 9 months after that, she gave birth to a boy, and every cup in the kingdom overflowed. The night after she'd given birth, she sat up in her bed with her boy in her arms and with 6 ladies attending her in the room. And they talked and they joked and they laughed and they were relieved, and eventually Rhiannon fell asleep. As you can imagine, she was tired. And the 6 women sat up talking, and eventually, one by one, they fell asleep. In the early morning, one of them woke up and, "Shh, wake up, wake up. What is it? The baby, it's gone." Rhiannon's child was gone, was missing, was not in her arms. "Wake up, wake up." And soon they're all awake and they're hissing at one another. "What happened? Why weren't you awake? Why weren't you awake?" And eventually one of them took charge and said, listen, we are all going to get it. We're all going to be in big trouble if she wakes up and her child is not here. There's one thing we could do. And she told the others her idea, and they were horrified, but eventually they came round. So still in the early morning, that woman left the chamber, crept through the corridors of the castle, and came back with a puppy in her arms. A puppy and a knife. With her hand over the pup's mouth, she slit its throat, and then rubbed her hand in the blood, and then rubbed the blood over Trianon's mouth. And all the women took a turn to do this, so they were all equally complicit. And then, 1, 2, 3, 4. Ah, she's eating our baby. She's eating our baby. The cry went through the castle. The cry went out through the land. She has eaten her baby. Trianon has eaten her baby. Trianon has eaten her baby. And Pwyll was woken up and he came rushing. And Trianon told him, look, no, this is not true. This is not true. He sent everyone out and the two of them spoke. And, well, outside, she's eating our baby. Kill her. Kill her. We need advice. We need to take advice on this, he said. And he sent for an old wise man who'd counselled him for many years. And they all spoke together there in the bedchamber. And the old wise man said, well, this is what I've got to say to you, and you're not going to like it. Rhiannon, my lady, you should admit your guilt. What? But I know. But they are never going to accept your innocence. I can hear it in their voices. You're going to be found guilty when you are tried. So better to admit your guilt and hope for a lesser punishment. Trianon was outraged. She had come to live amongst these people who were beneath her, these mere mortals, and this is how they treated her. Though she was outraged, though she was furious, she was sensible. And she said, very well. And so that evening, when the court was convened, she admitted her guilt. And she listened as the man who had been elected judge spoke her punishment. For the most grievous crime that you have committed, you shall leave this castle. You shall go to the mounting block outside the gates, where men and women climb up onto their horses, and there you shall stay. And when any man or woman comes to the court and asks why you sit there in the dirt by the mounting block, you will tell them of your crime, and you will offer to carry them on your back into the court. You will live as a beast of burden, for it is a beast that you are. And that very night, Trianon went out through the gates to the mounting block, and there she sat. And the next day, she began carrying men and women on her back into the court. Seasons passed, and some way away from there, in another part of Wales, a wealthy man named Ternon, a horse breeder, he had a chat with his wife. Ternon and his wife were a happy couple. They were wealthy, they were good at their work, and they had no sorrow in their life really to speak of, except for the fact that they were childless. But though they didn't have so much sorrow in their lives, that's not to say that they didn't have any problems. They had one particular problem, which vexed them greatly. You see, every Beltane Eve, for years now, every Beltane Eve, the night before Beltane, the night before the 1st of May, one of their foals had disappeared from the stables. There was always a foal in the stables at that time, and Ternon would come to the stables in the morning and he would find that foal missing, and he had no idea why it happened. And so this year, he decided to get to the bottom of it. He said to his wife, come Beltane Eve, I'm not going to sleep in the bed with you. I'm going to sleep in the stables, with the mare and the foal in their stall, and I'm going to find out what's been happening to our foals." His wife agreed. She was a little worried for him, but, you know, she was really curious too to find out what was going on. She made sure he took his sword with him. And so come Beltane Eve, Tiernan, bedded down in the stables among the straw, with the mare and her foal, listening to the whinnying of the horses, watching the lamplight flicker on the ceiling until he fell asleep. And when he woke up, late in the night, he saw a monstrous arm come in through the open upper stable door. It was red, it was hairy, its nails were like claws, and carefully it reached down and picked up the foal. The foal still slept as it was lifted up, out, and then Tiernan came to his senses, and he leapt up and he drew his sword and he cut off that hand. And outside there was a great roaring. Now all the horses were screaming and whinnying. And Tiernan leapt over the stable door and out into the darkness. He ran after that sound, that roar. But it was no use. Soon the sound was gone. Whatever creature had owned that clawed hand was much bigger than Tiernan was. So he turned around and he headed back to the stables. And on his way back to the stables, he saw something on the grass, illuminated by the moon and starlight. He picked it up, and it was a little boy. A little boy, a baby, wrapped up in silk. And his wife got quite a surprise when she woke up the next morning, and there was her husband, sat on the end of the bed, looking at her with a smile on his face and this baby boy in his arms. He told her the whole story and said, "You know, we should probably ask around, see who this lovely wee lad belongs to." But he already knew what his wife was going to say. "Can we not keep him?" she said. Can we not just keep him?" He didn't have the heart to refuse her. They called him Gri. They raised him as their own, saying that Tiernan's wife had kept her pregnancy quiet in case there was a problem. And oh, there was so much happiness in that house. They raised Gri. Gri grew up strong and happy, and he grew up fast. By the time he was 2, he was like a 4-year-old. By the time he was 4, he was like an 8-year-old. And by the time he was an 8-year-old, he was a young man. And his mother said, "Gri should have a horse of his own." And Tiernan said, "Aye. How about that horse that was a foal the night he... "Yes, good idea." And so that horse that had been that foal that the clawed hand had almost taken away, that was given to Gri. And he rode it every day. He rode it far across the hills. And there was even more happiness in that house from that day. But then, one day, Tiernan received an invitation to visit an old foster brother of his who lived in a different part of the country. They would visit every 2 years, every 3 years, and spend a few days together, catch up. And so he left the farm and he went to visit his friend. And they spent a few days together, and one evening they were sat there talking by the fire. And Tiernan said, "You know, I haven't heard any news from Dyved for a while. How are things in Dyved?" "Ah, they're all right there now, I suppose," said his friend. "Of course, they weren't a while ago. You'll have heard of that business with Poyeth and that Rhiannon."
"No. What happened?"
"You've not heard?"
"Not heard."
"Oh, quite a business that was," said his friend.
She ate her child."
Tiernan listened to the man's story, a story that everyone knew and everyone accepted but hadn't reached his ears. And the thing is, Tiernan, he knew Poyeth. They'd met a few times. And thinking of this story,
thinking of his son Gri, the way he'd come to him. It was pretty clear that this boy, that his son, was really Poyet and Rhiannon's son. And when he went back there and he looked at his son's face, there was no doubting it, no doubting it whatsoever. So he spoke to his wife, told her the story he'd heard, and said, "We can't leave the poor woman in that state, in that wretched, miserable state." And though it broke her heart, it was very hard for her. Tiernan's wife was a good woman, as he was a good man, and she said, "You're right, you're right." And indeed, Gri was almost grown up now, and probably wouldn't be long before he was leaving the home. So they sat down with him. They had a chat, told him the whole story, and he took it remarkably well. And so off they went. They crossed the country until they came to Arberth. And there, among the mud, was the mounting block. And sat in the mud by the mounting block was a wretched woman. She turned towards them at the sound of their approach and stood up wearily. Her hair was matted and greasy and lank. Her eyes were sunken, her skin sallow, and she stared at them with a mixture of resentment, anger, and deep, deep pain. "My lords, my lady," she said, "I will carry you into the court on my back because of the crime that I have committed." "No, you shall not," said Tiernan. "You shall walk into the court with us, for we have something to say to Poyet and to you." So she walked in with them, and soon they were all in front of Poyet, who sat there in his high seat, and he listened to the story that Tiernan told. "Do you doubt," said Tiernan when he had finished, "that this boy is your son?" Poyet looked at the boy and said, "I do not doubt it." And there was laughter then, and there was cheering, and there was celebration. And Rhiannon took her son in her arms. She stroked his face and said, "They've called you Gri, but I would like to give you a new name. Because of all the anxiety that you have caused me and that you have now saved me from, I will call you Pryderi, which in Welsh means anxiety." And so it was agreed that Pryderi would stay there at the court. It was agreed that Tiernan and Tiernan's wife would be his foster parents, and they would be rewarded handsomely for the service they had provided to Poyet and Rhiannon. And so this story ends. But we shall hear more of Pryderi, for he crops up in the second branch of the Mabinogi, he crops up in the third branch, he crops up in the fourth branch. And those stories are all well worth hearing. Thus ends the first branch of the Mabinogi. Hope you enjoyed this story. One thing that's come up when I've told this story is the monster, or whatever you call the creature, that stole the child and the foal. It's strange to us as modern listeners that we never find out who this creature is and why it stole the child and the foals. We expect this kind of thing to be cleared up, as that's how contemporary stories work, but it isn't always how life works. Sometimes monstrous hands reach in and tear apart our lives, and we never find out who did it or why. Of course, this could have been explained in stories that are now lost to us. But that being the case, there's an invitation to dream into the gaps, to imagine for ourselves who this creature was and what it intended. As Jung said, humans are myth-making creatures. It's in our nature to do so, and indeed, doing so nourishes the stories and keeps them alive. That's all for this week. If you're enjoying the podcast, please support it by sharing it on social media or even sharing the link with a few friends who enjoy a good story. I'd also really appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, as reviews really help the podcast to grow. You can get access to every House of Legends episode by becoming a patron. By pledging $5 per month or more, you'll receive a patron-only episode each month, along with a worksheet full of questions and creative prompts to help you deepen your connection to the story. As well as being an oral storyteller, I'm also an author. I write retellings of myths and legends, as well as fantasy inspired by Celtic myths and legends. You can find my books by searching for Daniel Allison on Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble and Waterstones, although currently you can only get my full catalogue on Amazon. You can get my book The Shattering Sea as a free download on Kindle, Kobo and Apple Books. If you're interested in becoming a storyteller yourself, or you're already a storyteller and would like to develop your craft, you can join my online storytelling school, The Roundhouse. You can also join my Mythsingers coaching program, which includes Roundhouse membership plus 2 monthly group coaching sessions with me, or you can take one-to-one coaching. Visit roundhouseschool.com to learn more and download a free pack of stories. You'll find links to all of the above in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time.